From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
We hope everybody is keeping up with their New Year's resolutions. We are back for another episode of PDGA Radio this week. I'm Steve Hill. I'm joined by Sarah Lamerson. Sarah, how are your resolutions going?
Let's see. What did I say my resolutions were? I'm just kidding.
Wish I could remember. No.
No, I'm just kidding. To volunteer more and to have more self-care. Yeah. So I went to an orientation for this mobile pet vaccine clinic, and they give low-cost vaccines to low-income families for dogs and kitties. And I went to an orientation, and I'm hoping to do my first event on the 26th.
Nice.
So
that's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. What about you?
Yeah. I got out to play last week. I took it down to the wire, went out Sunday morning. But it was good. Hit basket on a long shot. Have I told you my dirty secret that I actually don't have any aces in my career?
See, aces are, it's okay. Aces are all about, yeah, but they're all about quantity. Like the people who get tons of aces are out playing like every day, multiple rounds.
Oh yeah.
So you just need to play. The more you play, the more obviously.
I just need to go play shorter courses. Don't have the longest arm in the world.
Sure.
Although this shot was pretty good. I was pretty stoked about this one. I've hit basket twice in the past like 3 weeks with the same disc. It's gonna go in soon, so
yeah, you're gonna get that one. I can feel it.
Hopefully it'll be good. And by the way, I just want people who are listeners to know, I want to hear if you are in my boat and you're still chasing that elusive first ace. Let me know. Send us an email, radio@pdga.com, and I will give you a commiseration shout out. Because
ace chasers.
And you know what though? Don't chase aces. Just try and make good shots.
Yeah.
That's all good.
Because a lot of times aces are bad shots.
Ding, ding, ding. See, that's how I make myself feel better about it.
I'm going to say 4 out of 5 of my aces were terrible shots. And I was like, oh my God. And the basket just got in the way of a shot that was going to be way too long.
Yeah. Hey, that's okay though. Sometimes we need a little help.
Yeah.
On a random note, I want to give a small shout out before we get into the show today. Let's shout out to Betty White, who today turned 97.
She's amazing.
She is amazing. She is a national treasure. And
a little fireball.
I bet she could play disc golf. I bet she has. I'd be willing to bet that Betty White has played disc golf at some point in her 97 years.
She's probably thrown a disc or two. Maybe not traditional disc golf, but
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Throwing something at a tree. So on the show today, we've got a few different things coming up. We are going to talk to Ricky Wysocki about his new deal with Innova and just, you know, thoughts on the upcoming season and how his transition is going. And then PDGA Events Manager Sean Sinclair is going to join the show, and we're going to talk about his new role with the organization. So should be fun. We've got some other news to get to first, though. I want to make a couple announcements. First off, I know this only caters to a certain segment of the population, but it's a segment of the population that needs to know. If you are planning on playing the European Open this year and you are rated 980 or better on the men's side and 930 or better on the women's side, go register. It's time to register. Don't be left out in the cold for the European Open. Don't be left on the wait list. Sarah, we're going to have to dedicate an episode coming up pretty soon to people on wait lists for big tournaments.
Oh, I've heard and seen.
it's a little bit disconcerting, but I, you know, hey,
that's a good word for it.
You got to do what you got to do. So European Open registration, that is taking place this summer, July in Nokia, Finland. It's going to be a blast. Make sure you go register. And then, Eagles Wings Junior Grant applications are now being accepted. They do this every year. They're a great organization, and they are trying to help 6 kids get to either Junior Worlds or the U.S. Junior Championships. And it's like, I don't know, Sarah, I don't know if you went and looked at this information, but it's a pretty sweet deal that you can get if you win one of these grants. Did you check it out?
No. What all do you get?
So I will just list a few of the things because the list is long. But if you're one of the 6 kids who are chosen, you get $100 for traveling expenses. you know, you get a personal video call from Paige Bierkes, which I don't not want. Cool. I want to sign up my kid for this now. But I mean, like, a pair of shoes from Keen, Tour Series discs from Nate Doss and Valerie Jenkins, a jersey from Paragon Disc Golf, Whale Sack stuff, all kinds of other stuff. An Innova VIP card for 50% off a $200 order. Holy cow. Like,
whoa.
All kinds of stuff. So if you want more information, go to PGA.com. It's on our front page slider. And, you know, this is more for, obviously, I doubt we have many junior players listening to this show. But if you're a parent of a junior player listening to this show, this is a really good opportunity. Thank you to Eagles Wings for continuing to partner with that. It's great. Them and Kids Disc Golf, they're doing a lot to really grow the junior side of the sport. It's pretty good. Speaking of the younger junior side of the sport, Sarah, I got a really rad email today from Jay Yeti Redding, and I forwarded it along to you, so I'm hopeful you saw that.
I did.
On the youth and education type of side, we know that Jay and Des Redding run the Educational Disc Golf Experience. It's a tournament charity program. And they sent out a press release today, and the headline is Edge Disc Golf Awards Over $40,000 in 2018.
That's incredible.
That is. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That came from different, you know, tournaments and their partnerships with them. It came from working with us at the PDGA. It came with the Chains for Charity that we talked about back at USDGC, where you were pledging you know, birdie points and stuff to a certain player. So all told, more than $40,000 this year. Great accomplishment. They do great things in that organization to really get disc golf in front of kids and in schools. So thank you to Jay and Des for all their hard work there. And congratulations. That's a huge, huge accomplishment for them.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, Sarah, you also have some news coming up. What's going on with you in the next week or so?
Okay, well, I think I've won the award for longest event name ever, and I'm pretty excited.
Oh, do you really?
I had some people, Sarah Nicholson, who was like, that's crazy. But I have to include some names in my event name, or some sponsors in my event name, and I'm happy to do so. And I also told her that I love reading the long names out on the show. So here goes. All right, 6th annual Ladies and Gents Mixed Doubles presented by Throw Pink and Smoky Mountain Discs, driven by Innova.
I mean, you could have made that longer.
It flows.
No, I'm just saying, you could have made it longer.
I know.
You shortened
I could have.
Gentlemen to Gents.
Well, it's always been Gents.
Well,
yeah.
I'm just saying. You could have had driven by Innova Discs. I mean, there's other ways. It could have been longer. I'm just saying, you should make it longer.
I mean, there may be some more sponsors that come in that will work their name into the title too. We'll see. But my news that I'm excited about is the registration opened last Wednesday. I believe that was the 9th, and it filled in 1 week.
Wow.
Which I believe is a record. And I've got 3 teams on the waiting list, which is pretty cool.
That's great.
And I'm introducing, so this is not as much of me bragging. It's more of like, I thought of some cool ideas to raise even more money for this event.
You're running a good event. It's fine.
No. I'm trying to give ideas.
Give people free ideas.
PDs.
Yes.
So here we go. So last year we raised record-breaking amount, $3,000 for the South Carolina Cancer Alliance. But I was just trying to think of ideas that we could, like, I don't want to tap out my players even more. They pay a $50 entry for the team, which is pretty low, I think.
Right.
But then there's raffles and all sorts of stuff that they can also, you know, ace pool that they can spend their money on. And I don't want to just keep asking them for more money. So I was like, well, what if they ask other people for money? So I created a GoFundMe account. It's like a team account. And people who are registered to play in the tournament can go on and be part of the team and raise money by promoting their page or their account.
Okay.
And so say I was raising money as a player and shared it with you and you donated $25. That $25 is attributed to your team. So every day, if I get a new donation, I can see like, oh, Steve Hill donated this on behalf of Debbie Scott, for instance. She's raising money right now.
Okay.
So whoever raises the most money by the tournament day, which is March 30th, both members of the team will receive a pink Innova Discatcher 24 basket.
Sweet.
Yeah, $200 value.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool. So
we've already got, I think I just looked at it, it was already $400, and people just started raising money yesterday. And I'll put my little plug in. If you are looking to be a sponsor for any charity tournaments this year, please, I guess you could get in touch with me on Facebook or PDGA, radio at PDGA.com or Instagram.
Yeah,
any of those places, always looking for stuff that we can put in the raffle, CTP prizes, or even just cash to offset some of the tournament costs. So.
Awesome. And that's now it's full, but it's coming up at the end of March. So we'll be able to get some more updates about that. I do like some of these team names. I'm scrolling down the lists.
Oh my gosh. Oh, that was the other thing. I was going to say
There's some pretty good ones.
Favorite team names. One of them is I'm only here for the raffle.
Okay. That's good.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Because people, somehow there was one year where one person just won like all the big things.
That happened at the Hall of Fame Classic last year too. Like the same guy won all the stuff, like baskets, barbecue, everything.
Well, he must have paid a lot of money for tickets.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Oh, there's another one.
I like Gramps and Cramps.
Oh. Yeah,
that one just made me laugh.
That's a repeat. I think they've used that name for at least the last 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah. My favorite is my friends Shay Vandekar and Lucy Hughes is annoyingly indecisive. That's a great one.
That is pretty great. Well, good. So, well, I'm happy to hear that it filled up so quickly. And, you know, thanks for sharing your ideas about how to get people some more moolah and some more interest in their events. Good stuff.
Yeah.
So we really kind of newsy type show today instead of like full blown long discussions. But couple other things to get to really before we get into our interviews with Ricky and Sean. First, I want to point out we, over the last couple days, through PDGA social media channels, we've announced our video coverage plans for the Las Vegas Challenge. Las Vegas Challenge kicks off. We're just about a month away. It's the first NT of the season. I'm super pumped. And I'm especially super pumped for the media coverage we're going to have. Obviously we're going to have UDisc Live scoring there, which we normally, would, cause it's a national tour. Those guys are awesome. But we've announced this week, we're going to have Jomez out for both men's and women's league cards. We're going to have Central Coast Disc Golf on Chase card. And then ideally, I haven't put everything to bed yet on the last two, but I'm hoping to get two more cards covered for a total of like five cards by four different companies. Pretty stoked to be able to have that out there. Jeff Jacquois and the Las Vegas Disc Golf Club and Innova Discs have all been super supportive and you know, great with what we want to do with media at this event. They've been really awesome partners. And so we're stoked, Sarah. I know you're not going to be there, but you will have a lot more coverage to get through before we can break that one down on the podcast.
Yeah, that'll be super exciting. From my couch.
From your couch. Exactly. It's going to be fun. And then, you know, I had another thought about the NT stuff. And if I remember it, I'll come back. Oh, yeah. It was related to UDisc stuff. The one other thing I want to put out is we are hopefully working on at Vegas. If you're going to be a person who comes out and can volunteer for UDisc live scoring, we always need it. It's always a big need. We're hopefully going to have some incentives where, you know, volunteers will get a certain percentage off at the pro shop or at the snack bar and things like that. So we'll put some more details out about that as the event gets closer. And come out if you're in the area. Come watch the event. It's going to be rad. And especially, it's going to be even more rad because we learned this week that Evelina Salonen is going to be there, one of the top players in Europe. She came over here in 2017, and it's going to be good to have her back for both Vegas and the Memorial. Sarah, what are your thoughts on Evelina hopping across the pond?
I'm really excited to actually get to see her play on video. And I really am interested in seeing how she matches up against some of our best players in the U.S. I feel like we talked about that so much last year with the results that we saw from all of her big events. And it's so hard to compare. Like, we have no idea how she's going to match up. But She's had some really good finishes in the past. So I think she's going to give some of our ladies a run for their money.
Yeah, I think so.
I hope she does.
I think the biggest wild card in all of it is really the weather, in terms of, you know, she lives in Finland and it's very cold right now. So how on is her game going to be? Will she have been able to get in the practice and the field work that some of the players who are in the United States, where the weather might be a little more mild, be able to do? So,
well, that's what I was, and maybe you know this, that's what I was wondering, is how far in advance is she coming over?
That, like,
how
I don't
many practice
know.
Days will she have?
Yeah, okay. I'm not sure. I can try and find out, but that's an important question, you know. Obviously, yeah. I'm sure she wants to get here a bit early and, like, you know, not be jet lagged and all that good stuff.
Right. Yeah.
So, I believe she came in fourth when she was here back in 2017. At the Las Vegas Challenge. Fourth in Vegas and sixth the Memorial. So
yeah.
I'm going to predict at least one top three finish for her at either of those two events.
I could see that. I mean, so looking at the registration page for Vegas, she's the fourth highest rated female.
Yep.
But barely, like 3 points below Katrina.
Okay.
And then the Memorial, she's, let's see.
She's
same thing
there as well. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Same women.
Yeah. I mean, so she's coming in as the fourth highest rated player at all these events. I don't think it's out of hand for me to say.
Not at all.
A top three finish. It's probably, it's almost a little conservative, if we're being honest. I may be hedging.
Yeah.
I should
get, I mean, her. How exciting would it be for her to come over here and win one of these events?
I would love it. I would love it.
Me
it would
too.
Be great for her. It would be great for the sport. It would be great for her, because I think then, you know, maybe she gets over here a little more. Maybe she spends some time here in the summer too, you know?
Yeah. That would be awesome.
It'd be awesome. I'd be pulling for it. Well, I know she's not super comfortable with English. We'll have to see if maybe we can get her on the show if she has a little more of a comfort level. If not, obviously, no worries.
It's okay. I'm not always comfortable with English either. So.
Fair point.
Butcher people's names and
you know. Yeah, maybe she can give us some lessons on pronouncing some of the European players' names.
Oh, that would be great. I need that this year.
That would be helpful.
So,
and then, you know, so going off of that, we're getting into tournament play already, Sarah, and really the off season seems like it's officially over, even though I'm not sure it ever really, I don't know if the season ever ended. But
it didn't really see, except for the couple weeks during the holidays, it seemed like things were in, like, halfway swing.
And there was always something happening, right?
Yeah.
But the first big A tier of the year was just over the weekend. It was the Shelly Sharp Memorial out in Scottsdale. And we had some victories from a couple names that we know. Jennifer Allen took down the women's side. And then Anthony Barella on the men's side, which, not terribly surprising because he's local to Arizona. But, you know, a couple big names that were there too. I mean, Austin Hannum, Drew Gibson, Paul Uleberry. You know, so good strong showing for Anthony Barella. What's I don't know, I admit I don't know a terrible amount of that tournament. I believe they play that one at Vista, right?
Yeah. That's what, at least some of the videos that I saw of Jennifer Allen throwing were at Vista. Yeah.
Okay. So kind of a little precursor.
I'm surprised the other Allen didn't play.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe she's not down getting ready for the season yet. But you know, only three women in the field there. And really the whole field wasn't super deep. It's, you know, it's the first event of the year. I know I had talked to a couple players beforehand who were thinking of coming out and then decided not to. So I think it really just is a timing thing. And if they want to go, you know, how comfortable they're feeling with their bags and their off seasons and what kind of shape they're in and stuff. So, but either way, $1,300 for Anthony Barella, like, he's like, you know, 18 or 19, man. I wish I could have had $1,300 when I was 18 or 19 for three rounds of throwing frisbees. That's awesome.
I know. Yeah. Jennifer Allen seemed pretty comfortable with her game. She shot three down. Well, I don't want to spoil the hot round, so
That's true. Well,
we won't talk about her ratings.
Well,
just
why don't we
yet.
just why don't we just go into the hot round, Sarah? That's a good
All right.
segue.
I feel like I do that. I feel like I do that all the time. I'm
Let's
not doing it on
segue.
purpose.
You
Swear.
just gotta
All
do it
right. Segue.
naturally.
Here we go.
So segue into the hot rounds, where we will talk about Jennifer Allen briefly.
All right. Perfect. So the fifth hottest round of the weekend was Azriel Rogers, and she shot a 912 at the Shelly Sharp Memorial presented by SpinnersOnTheGreen.com. And that was her second round, and she finished second behind Jennifer Allen. The fourth hottest was Meredith Gere and Danielle Weingart.
I'd say Weingart, yeah. Weingart.
Weingart? Okay. And they both shot
Oh,
913.
Weigand. We'll go with Weigand.
Yeah.
Sorry, Danielle. Please forgive
all
us.
Right. I'm the worst. They both shot 913 at the Dynamic Discs Presents Straddle the Brazos, a Waco fundraiser in Waco, Texas, and they shot that during round two. I believe they are both new to the Hot Rounds leaderboard, so congratulations to both of you.
Yeah, very nice.
Yeah. Another tie for the third hottest rated round was between Christina Luthicum and Ruth Hudson. They were also playing the Straddle at the Brazos.
No, Ruth Hudson was at a different event. Two different events for
my
that
bad.
One.
My bad. All right. Christina was at Straddle the Brazos, and Ruth played Jewels of the Blue Ridge in Henderson, North Carolina. Christina's was round two. She finished second. And Ruth, that was her first round, and she finished first. I think those two are new on the list
no,
as well.
No, so I think we've had Christina before. I feel like we've had
Christina
on the list.
Okay. Well, definitely Ruth then.
We
so
definitely need to start actually keeping this list this year that we
I know.
Keep talking about.
Yeah, it's a list in our brains.
We'll make a note.
Not very sharp. Jennifer Allen, this surprises me. She didn't even have the hottest rated round of the weekend,
and
even though
she did
shot
it twice.
Super hot. Yes. She shot two 976s and one 973. She's 946 rated, so yeah. Very helpful for her rating update. And that was at the Shelly Sharp Memorial. And she finished first. So congratulations. I hope we see her now that she's settled in Arizona. I'm hoping we see her out on tour a little bit more.
Yeah,
so
she's got to be signed up for Vegas, right?
She signed up for Maricopa Open, Battle at the Fountain.
Oh, yeah,
Vegas,
she's in Vegas, yeah.
Vegas and Memorial and Glassboro.
Yep, so that's
there good. We go. All right, that answers my question. The hottest rated round was super hot. And Lisa Fakus shot a 989 at Straddle the Brazos. That was her first round, and she finished first, and that was her third highest rated round of her career.
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome.
That's a pretty yeah. Beastly round. Nice job, Lisa Fakus.
The off season is really suiting some people.
Yeah, right? Cool. We've had some really strong hot rounds lately, especially on the
yeah,
women's side,
agreed.
I feel like.
Yeah.
So shifting back over to who we talked about before, Anthony Barella, he had the fifth hottest rated round out at Shelly Sharp for his 1048 in the first round that led to his victory. And then we head up north a little bit to Almsville, Oregon, where Dustin Keegan shot a 1052 during the first round of the Santiam Open presented by Showers Pass. And he won that event. And I saw this title sponsor. I was like, what is Showers Pass? Like,
yeah.
Like my brain went everywhere. Like to me, Showers Pass thought it sounded to me like some kind of like deodorant. Like I felt like it was like an Irish Spring type of commercial for something that like brought it to my brain. But Showers Pass is actually like a really cool, Portland, Oregon based, like outdoor equipment and clothing retailer.
Yeah, I'm looking. I just Googled it.
Yeah, a lot of cycling and hiking and things like that. So Scott Withers was the TD for that one, and I got to give him some props for. I mean, that's the kind of stuff where if we can start getting some of those kind of sponsors, like
yeah.
the ones who aren't necessarily within the sport, that takes a lot of work and a lot of hustle. So good on him for that. It's pretty cool to see mm-hmm. them come on board. Going back down to Shelly Sharp, Owen Baer shot a 1054 in his third round, and that shot him up to a 13th place tie, so very nicely done. Still at Shelly Sharp, Austin Hannum came in second place, and that was due to his 1056 rated opening round. And the hottest round of the weekend, and man, this one's a big one. I'm going to call this extra super hot round because Jarrett Wallace shot a 1066 at the Innova Disc Presents the 2019 Echo Tour out in Goldsboro, North Carolina. He obviously won that event, and that round was 105 points over his rating. Yeah.
Dang.
So, Jarrett Wallace,
good job.
An extra tip of the cap to you this week. That is pretty tremendous. So, with that in mind, let's get to someone who knows a little something about 1066 rated rounds. We are going to talk to we're going to have Ricky Wysocki on the show. Then we'll go straight into our chat with Sean Sinclair, and Sarah and I'll come back and put a bow on the show. So we'll be back here in just a minute on PDJ Radio. On the line now is two-time world champion and new Innova team member Ricky Wysocki. Rick, how's your off season going, man? Pretty busy, pretty exciting, sounds like.
Yeah, I've been really busy. I really focused on just getting ready and getting my body, my bag, and all my behind-the-scenes stuff ready for the new year so that way I can step out to Vegas and feel like I'm totally ready to go with a new bag of discs and new sponsor and everything like that.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. You signed a 5-year deal with Innova. That seems to be, as far as anybody knows, really like the longest known disc golf contract. Let's just go back to the beginning. I mean, the Latitude contract expires, and then you've got an opportunity to go kind of hit the market. How did it all come to pass that you went back to Innova?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it really all goes back to the fact that, Innova was my first sponsor even before my very first sponsor in the sport. So like back in 2011, when I was a rookie, just starting out in Ohio, they were really the first company that took a chance on me. And, I hadn't really played many tournaments, and I got a recommendation from Avery that he wanted me on the team and everything. So they definitely took a chance on me when I was a rookie and hadn't really been playing that long. So I think that kind of resonates with me later on in my career with the fact that, they were the first ones to really put me on the map as far as a sponsor. And so I think that kind of really sparked my interest a little bit more. And so I think that, obviously, fast forward a couple of years now that with Latitude this last year, and, they were great, great company, great sponsor. And, we had a really great, great run with them. But as professional athlete, you have to set yourself up for the future, and what's best for me was working with Innova and working with a 5-year contract. So I think that it wasn't like I didn't plan on it, like until maybe two months, I would say 2 or 3 months were left in the year. So right around like I would say Florida, the Pro Tour event in Florida was the first time I kind of like got the idea that I may be going to Innova. And so I think that, that's where it started. I think me and Nate were talking about it in Florida a little bit. And I think that's, that's kind of what sparked my interest. And then one thing led to another. I was, talking to all the different people at Innova, talking all the details. That stuff takes so much time to work out. So I think it took a good month, 2 months to get everything finalized, all the stuff I wanted in the contract, and all the different stuff in it. So I think that might lead to your next question.
Well, I mean, can you tell us anything about what, like, details of the deal at all, or are you only telling people, 5 years?
Yeah. So, I mean, so basically, there's a lot of different stuff in it. So, Innova told me that I can talk about everything besides the money, which is that I know it's the good part.
So well,
I'm
cliffhanging
you guys.
Happens.
But yeah, so it's a 5-year contract. I get two royalty signature discs, which is really big bonus for me. That's really attractive.
And those are the Destroyer so far, right? Have you
decided
Destroyer, what the other one's going to be?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure yet about the other one. I'm still kind of debating. It might be the T-Bird 3, something like that.
Sure.
So I haven't totally made up my mind yet. It's kind of been a weird process for me just because I haven't had that much time to throw all the different discs to really know which ones I want to make my signature discs.
Right.
So it's kind of been, I've been trying to go as quick as I can as far as throwing as many discs as I can to see how they all fly. And I know how most of them fly, so it's not really that hard, but it's still some decisions to be made as far as that goes. So, but yeah, I get two signature discs and then two factory store release discs, and I haven't figured those ones out yet. So I've kind of been needing to make decisions on the factory store release discs, the ones that they release online, right, like the Nate Sexton Firebirds and that kind of stuff. So I get two of those in the contract. They've been helping with the van. So they obviously, as everyone saw, they rewrapped the van.
Right.
That part has helped a lot. They've put a lot of time and effort in designing that, finding a place to wrap it, designing the wrap. And so they're helping with the van also. The costs to go within the van, which is huge for me, traveling a lot. So there's just so many things up and over and beyond what I was getting with Latitude that I just couldn't really ignore it. And right, and I had to take the best opportunity for myself and to grow as a player and, you know, help grow the sport with Innova and my Saki Bomb brand as well. So I think that, yeah, there's a lot of other stuff in that made the decision that I did. It wasn't just like, oh, money, this, that. Yeah, that's great. But there's a handful of different things that I weigh my options with. Yeah, maybe money, maybe one of them. You know, performance, maybe another. What discs do I feel like I can perform well with? I just got to be blunt with myself and say, hey, what discs do I think I can perform the best with?
Right.
And so all these different categories, like I was been talking about, those are little things that bullet points that, you know, I say, all right, well, is it Innova or is it Latitude that's going to set me up for the best? You know, and so Innova won almost every category. So, you know, that's kind of where I made my decision final.
Were they the only company that you talked to?
Yeah. So basically, yeah, they were.
Okay.
Yeah. So I didn't really shop around too much. I just felt like, you know, there was a good chemistry there and I felt like that, you know, I really wanted to work with them and I know what I was getting into and I really felt comfortable with everyone working there. And
it probably doesn't hurt like that the East Coast factory is like in your backyard, right?
Yeah, that definitely helped. Yeah, I think that's something that was super appealing too, with my parents living in South Carolina. The factory is right there, and you know, if I ever needed anything or just wanted to go in there, it was always kind of weird because the factory was right there, but I never got to go, obviously because I wasn't sponsored. But now it's totally different ball game, and it's cool to be able to maybe just go in there whenever I wanted.
That's great, man. So, I mean, I know you've done this before, obviously. You went to Prodigy earlier in your career, and then a few years back you went to Latitude. But what's this process like for you? How does it go to relearn or learn, I should say, a new bag?
Yeah, I mean, it's of course I've thrown the discs and stuff before, but it's still different. Your game changes. It's been, you know, however, seven, eight years since I've thrown their disc before. So it's like, there's still, you know, your shots and the shots that you throw adapt and change throughout the year. So, you know, in each disc, all discs fly a little bit slightly different. And so your game has to, you know, it has to adapt to the different shots that the discs allow you to throw. Innova's got a wide variety of discs and I'm really thankful of all the arsenal that I'm going to be having with my bag. So I think once I dial it in, it might take another month or so. I think I'm trying to be ready, obviously, by Vegas, and I think I will. But yeah, there's definitely a learning curve with just getting the release of each disc is slightly different. So just training myself to know exactly what release is that I want on each disc to get the flight that I want out of it is something that is going to take a little bit of time. But I definitely think that in the long run, it'll be for the better. And I feel like I'll be able to throw shots that maybe I haven't been able to throw since, you know, maybe 2011, 2010, when I was really sponsored by them. So I think that in the long run, my arsenal will be bigger and better. And I'm excited to see what I can do and how I can score and hopefully improve my game on the years past. So I'm excited.
What's making up like the core of your bag right now? If you were to go out and play, let's say Vegas was tomorrow.
Yeah.
What would you be primarily throwing and putting with? I think those are the big ones, right? People want to know what you're going to replace the dagger with and what your main, obviously we know you're going to throw destroyers, but what else are you throwing?
Yeah. So obviously I'm throwing my signature destroyer. I'm throwing, I'm throwing Firebirds, throwing KC Pro AVRs. So I got these orange AVRs. That's going to be probably seen. People are going to be seeing me putt with those a lot.
That's their what orange you used to KC's putt with back stiff. In the day, right?
What's up?
Is that what you putted with your first go
yeah,
around with that?
Yeah, that's okay. What I putted with back in the day. So they got the big bead, and they're stiff. I like a stiff putter. Just feels like it's consistent release in the hand and in feel. So KC AVR, those have been liking those a lot, trying to get a lot of reps in with that and get my putt completely dialed in with the new putter. And so Firebird, T-Bird, Eagles, rocks, obviously, super excited to be able to throw rocks and have like three or four or five different rocks in the bag. And T-Bird 3. Yeah, and then there's a couple others like Gator and Pig and AVR X3 are like kind of all on the border of making the bag. I'm still okay. up in the air about them.
I was going to say, 100% that's sure. What's been the toughest disc or toughest shot for you to replace from your previous bag? Is it the Harp? I mean, that's kind of what everyone expected, but
yeah, I think so. I think it is. I think it that definitely is the hardest one, but there's definitely discs that Innova make that will help fill that hole. So I think that I just need to work with. And I think with Innova, it's the thing about it is there's so many discs to choose from. And that's what makes it almost hard is because I have to try them all. I think I'm going to start trying to throw the Rhino.
Okay.
I think the Rhinos could be a good, really good replacement. So I'm excited to be able to try that. I'm going to go to the field today and try some of those out.
Nice. So, I mean, how long do you give yourself until you really feel comfortable? I know you want to be ready for Vegas, but like, do you expect to maybe have some nerves or even just a little bit of discomfort at Vegas, especially if it's windy and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely a possibility of it. I mean, it's still only a month out, and I've really only been able to go to the course since January because that's when the announcement was. So I was only really thrown in the field up until then. So that's really only a month and a half, so to say, of practice on the courses and stuff like that. So there's definitely some time constraints that have set me back a little bit just because I haven't been able to go to the course. Like I was saying, because the actual announcement wasn't made until January 1st. Sure. But so yeah, there could be stuff here and there, but I think overall by the time, I've still got another couple weeks, and I think by then I think I'll really probably feel, I would say 90 to 95% confident, and probably 100% confident by Memorial and beyond.
Nice. Now I know we spoke a little while back when some of this stuff was in the works, but not really fully there yet. And you said that you still had some of your old Innova discs back home. Is there anything from the 2010, 2011 days that's in your bag today in 2019?
Yeah, it's actually really funny because someone actually sent me a message talking about a destroyer that I had, I think, given someone, or somehow this guy got one of my old destroyers, my old signature on it. So I could tell by the signature that it was like super old, and it was it was one of my old destroyers, and he actually sent it back to me. So now I'm throwing one of my old destroyers that this guy had for however many 7-8 years, and now I'm throwing it again. It's in my bag. It's a blue destroyer, so people will probably see it in some videos and stuff. But I thought it was super cool that this guy sent me my disc back after being gone for like 8 years. It was pretty funny.
That is pretty neat, man.
So that's one. But I think once I go back to my house, I've got a couple that I've saved that maybe I didn't even know I saved. And I'm excited to see what those are. I know they're kind of probably hidden and under a bunch of boxes, but I gotta see where those are.
A little sentimental value, maybe?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. That's cool. Pull them out and see if like they don't pick up where they left off in my bag.
So now I ask you this next question as someone who's, obviously I've followed your kind of career trajectory over the last couple years and everything like that. And one of the big things when you won your first world title and then your second world title was kind of it took you a little while to get the monkey off the back in terms of, taking down Macbeth and your guys' rivalry and everything. Is there, with that kind of in mind, is there any like pressure or anything in the back of your mind right now in that, hey, he was kind of the face of this company before, now I'm taking on that role. Is there any trepidation there, or is this something that, maybe you would have felt differently a couple years ago before those world titles?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think that, if I hadn't got world titles and got a bunch of wins before now, then maybe I would feel like that. But I feel like I'm totally able to hold my spot, and I feel like, I'm a great face in the sport, and I'm, one of, if not the best players in the world in my generation. So I think that I've totally earned that, and I feel like I'm going to be able to carry it, and I'm confident. So I think that, you know, confidence goes a long way. And I know that, obviously, I know that I can be world champion as I have in the past. So I know I can play at a high level. And now that I've got new discs and new company, I think that that's really even going to make me feel even more confident with my bag and my game, with all the different stuff that goes along with Innova. They're a big company, and they're really helpful towards their players, and they're, you know, they do a lot to make us feel comfortable on the road. And I think that that's why they have been so successful throughout the years in their you know, business. And I think that's just, you know, a sign of what's to come and what's to continue in the future. So I think that, you know, that's super exciting. I think that, you know, I'm not really comparing myself to anyone. I'm playing to the best of my ability, and I think if I do that, then that's what makes me happy, and that's what, you know, that's all I need.
That said, if we were able to set up the Ricky Wysocki versus Paul McBeth showdown, like a little Phil and Tiger action, what do you think?
Oh yeah,
we get it done. We get it done sometime.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, with the rivalry between us and the rivalry between the companies, I think that would be. That would be awesome. I think it would, if we find a venue and find somewhere to do it, I think that would be awesome for the sport. It would be a great growth of the sport. I think it would get a lot of people that maybe wouldn't tune into disc golf, right, but maybe they could see the storyline. They could see a rivalry brewing just based on how we act towards each other and how everything is going. That I think that it could be like nothing else in the sport. I think it could definitely change the game and definitely impact it. In a great way. So I think that, you know, if it happens, which I hope it does, I think that, you know, we could do so much unique stuff that no one's ever done before to really grow the sport,
yeah,
to followers and viewers that maybe would never watch it without something that we're doing like that.
We'll keep poking Paul about it a little bit.
All right.
So speaking of world championships and everything, obviously I know we're maybe getting a little ahead of ourselves, but it's 2019 now, and you know, we're heading into a new season, so let's talk a little bit. You know, I was looking back at your past performances at Ledgestone, comparing there, obviously, because at least Lake Eureka is going to be used for half of Pro Worlds this year. Fourth place is your best performance there in your career. Is that something?
No,
what do you think you got to do to improve on that and you know, get your third world title?
Yeah, you know, I think that's one course I've really struggled on. I think that just throughout the years, that's just how sometimes, you know, golf in general, there's always certain holes and certain, maybe it turns into certain courses that you struggle on. And I think that that's just going to be I think I've just had a mental block for me on that course for some reason that, you know, I just can't get past, you know, that's just the challenge. But I think it doesn't mean I'm not going to in the future. So I think it's just something that I have to mentally prepare for and mentally know that I'm going to step up and maybe not feel 100% confident on some holes, but still I need to execute shots. And so I think that, you know, it's more of a mental thing with me out there at Lake Eureka. And I think that, you know, it's going to be a total mental challenge and a mental grind with myself to be able to fight demons in the past that I may not have, you know, really performed well on certain holes and obviously the course and tournament in general. So, you know, it's something that I'm going to definitely be thinking about and definitely be excited to see if I can't conquer and change the outcome of, you know, my scoring out at that course.
Now, besides all the excitement of new sponsorship, testing out new discs for your bag and everything, you've been hanging out with some celebrities apparently this off season. And I'm sure you've talked about this with other people already, but I haven't gotten to talk to you. So tell me the story. First of all, how did you run into Aaron Rodgers? For people maybe who listen to this podcast or don't watch NFL football, obviously that's Super Bowl champion and Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers. Give me the story, man. Where were you? What happened?
Yeah, so I was basically just in Arizona. I was just grocery shopping. I was going to the local grocery stores called Sprouts.
Oh, I love
so
Sprouts.
So it's kind of like, yeah, I don't know if you, probably all over probably all over the country. I'm not sure, but it's just like an organic, really nice, you know, grocery store. But anyways, I was in Scottsdale, Arizona, just going to grocery shop, and actually, there's a local disc golf buddy that I have that actually works there. He's like a produce manager. So I was just shooting the crap with him, talking to him. He sometimes gets me discounts at the cash register and stuff. So anyways, I'm checking out, talking to my buddy, and I see this dude walking. I'm like, he's got like a beanie on. I was like, that looks like Aaron Rodgers. And then I just was like, whatever, that's not him. And then I kept like cashing out and checking out, and I was talking to my other buddy. I'm like, dude, I'm pretty sure that's Aaron Rodgers. So he like he went around and like started looking for, like, started like secretly look, pretending like he was messing around with the produce, and he was like scoping them out. He's like, yeah, that is him. And he was like, next thing I know, the whole store was like with rubbernecking at him, and but I was like the first person to see him, and it was super funny. So I checked out and I went over there and started talking to him. But yeah, it was super funny the way it turned out. But yeah, then so I ended up talking to him, and he was with his either wife or girlfriend, Danica Patrick, which I didn't know at the time. But she's tiny. She was like 5 foot, like 3 or 2. She was tiny.
Okay.
But yeah, so he was with her grocery shopping. But yeah, ended up talking to him, took a picture, obviously, that everyone probably saw on Facebook and Instagram. And then I started talking to him for like 5 or 10 minutes, just about mostly about disc golf. And I was like, hey, yeah, I'm playing disc golf, whatever. I kind of gave him a backstory, and he was like super excited. He kept kind of asking questions and stuff. I kind of told him.
Did you ask him, like, has he actually played? Because there's always been that kind of rumor going around that Aaron Rodgers like used to play disc golf.
Yeah. So I don't believe so.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he knows about it and stuff, but I don't think he's ever actually really played, and he was super excited about it. But I think he was I don't think he has. He was. But yeah, I told him about like the ESPN Ace and stuff that I've been on ESPN, and he was kind of like, it caught his attention. He was super
and
pumped.
He was chill, like he wasn't like, hey, get out of my face, dude. An approachable person.
Yeah, no, totally approachable. You know, totally cool. He was, not super chilled out. So I think that, yeah, it was fun. We had a good conversation.
Did you tell him you were a Browns fan?
You ruined my fantasy. You know, that's not what I said.
You didn't tell him you're a Browns fan?
Yeah, exactly right.
Were you secretly wishing that? Were you secretly picturing that he was Baker Mayfield?
Right. Yeah. Actually, kind of. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. That's funny.
And then just the other day, you went and played with Casey DeSmith, the goalie for the Pittsburgh Penguins, who is obviously a pretty known disc golf fan as well. How did that go?
Actually, it was really cool. So yeah, I we were talking through Instagram, and he was coming to play the Arizona Coyotes, the hockey team here in Arizona, and so he was staying in town at a really nice hotel. And so I hit him up and I was like, hey dude, let's play around. And so ended up, I picked him up since he was traveling with the team. I picked him up and we went to Vista after I picked him up, and I gave him some discs. He had a couple discs. I gave him a couple of my old Latitude discs, and we went and played, and I gave him actually one of my new Destroyers. And it was actually yellow and black. It was pretty fitting.
Nice.
It's team colors. And so I had to make sure I matched his team colors with his discs, because I know he's kind of color coordinated with his team. But yeah, so we went and played around. I got some videos. I kind of tried to help him with some of his form, and helped him with some of his shots that he might have been struggling with. And we just went around Vista, had fun, kind of just talked a lot and kind of reminisced on, how his career's going. He just signed a new contract too. And I just did too. So we kind of were just talking details and just talking to each other about that. And we kind of had a lot in common. It was fun. So I think that, yeah, he's definitely got a great passion for disc golf. He doesn't get that much time to play, he was saying, because of obviously the hockey season is, long, and it's, that's the priority for him. But he definitely, in his off season, whenever he can, he tries to play as much as he can, and he really has a passion for it. So yeah, it was fun to be able to share some time with him and get some videos and help him out. And I'll send you those videos that I got of him.
Yeah,
too.
We'd love to see it. We can post them out. That'd be great. I mean, he's not a bad player. He's 954 rated.
Yeah, no, he's got skill for sure.
He's only played one event, but did you know he actually played the PFDO last year? He played the Pittsburgh Flying Disc Open last
year. That's what actually he was saying. He was telling me that. Yeah. He was like, yeah, I played with Grady Shue, and he was super pumped. Yeah.
Yeah, he came in 35th. Cool. Tied for 35th. So
yep.
Not bad, man. All right, so then one last question on the celebrity front.
Yeah.
Let's say you had your pick of any celebrity to take out to the disc golf course. Who's it going to be?
Ooh, that's a good one. Let's see here. I would like to see LeBron.
Oh yeah.
I'd love to see LeBron throw a disc and see what he thinks about the sport and just kind of pick his brain about that. That would be fun.
That's true. You got the Cleveland connection there.
Yeah, exactly. I got the Cleveland connection for sure. We both grew up like 20 minutes apart, so I got a hometown connection with him.
Nice.
Yep.
Thanks, man. I know off-season is a busy time for you. Thanks for taking some time out of your schedule to talk, and looking forward to catching up with you more in Vegas.
For sure, dude. Appreciate the time.
All right, thank you. That was Ricky Wysocki, and we'll be back here in just a moment on PDJ Radio. All right, welcome to the show. A man who we often talk about on this program, but have yet to have on. Our bad. Sean Sinclair. He's the event manager with the PDGA. Sean, thank you for joining us today. How's it going?
My pleasure. Doing great. Thank you.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know Sean, not only is he the PDGA events manager, he also used to be a touring professional disc golfer. He will wipe the floor with you if you ever do play disc golf with him. And he also happens to be Sarah's partner, so it all comes together nicely today. So, but Sean, the reason we're having you on the show is not just to, you know, tell you how great you are at disc golf, but you know, this events manager role. Last year you were on, I believe your title was what, event coordinator?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So you're the events manager now for the PGA. What's that bring for you? What does that change for you this year compared to last year?
A lot more on the administrative side. Like right now, preseason, we're dealing with all of the event agreements for the national tour. And as you know, getting that new media policy in there, tracking down the TDs, getting them to sign that off, and then making sure they're ready for their events and if they have any issues and course items that we need to talk about and discuss, just anything we can do ahead of time before we get to the event to, you know, make it run as smoothly as possible.
So what makes a top tier event? So people have lots of different opinions under the sun about how tournaments should be run. But what's something that people may think makes a top tier event, but really is not all that important?
The way I look at it, there's two types of things. There's one, the shock and awe, all of the front facing stuff people see. And then there's all of the behind the scenes stuff. My take on it has always been, let's make all of the behind the scenes stuff run as smoothly as possible, all the attention to details, and then that will make the shock and awe look a lot better. If we can have all of our stuff that people typically don't see run without a hitch, then the stuff that is facing the customer or the players in this fact will seem a lot better.
So going into that, what is on the back end? I know you've got a big checklist for events that you like to check off before every big one. So give us an idea. What are you looking for when you go out and do a site visit? And you know, what kind of feedback are you generally giving to TDs before these elite level events?
So there's a lot of the mandatory stuff that we're looking for, you know, cell phone, bathrooms, water on the courses, tee pads, you know, baskets, all that stuff. But when it comes to the courses and the actual tournament, we're looking for A, speed of play, safety, making sure all of the out of bounds and potential mandos, if there's, you know, weird little drop zones and island holes, making sure all of that makes sense, looking for every potential possible outcome. One thing I like to tell TDs is think about the worst shot you've ever seen on a hole and add 20%.
I mean, you kind of hit something in that list that has gotten better, I feel like, over the last couple of years, but I want to know what your real solution is. Pace of play. Like, we'll go out to some of these big events and we'll be chatting back and forth with each other or something, and it's like, backup on hole 6, 10 minutes, or we've got UDisc, the guys messaging us being like, hey, what's going on? We haven't seen any scores entered in a while. Is there a backup? What do you think is the biggest thing that impacts course flow and backups in play, and what can be done to kind of rectify that at some of these tournaments?
So in my opinion, 99% of the time, it is course design. When I go on these site visits, I like to tell tournament directors, hey, sometimes you might have this super amazing hole, gold level, tucked in pin, OB everywhere, but it's potentially going to cause a huge backup. And, you know, when we're trying to get a few hundred people through a course, maybe twice a day, and rain delays, we don't want to have that happen. The other part of the course design is when you have holes that are kind of in that in-between state where it's technically a par 4, par 5, but players might be trying to go for the green on a par 4, or they're, you know, waiting for the certain part of the fairway to clear when the design of the hole is to throw short of that. So addressing areas that I think would potentially cause a backup ahead of time is a huge factor.
Is that so? I'm not home right now. Sean's at our house. Is that Coltrane barking?
Yeah, you want me to go?
Nah, he's fine. He just wants to be part of the show. He misses Sarah.
Yeah, he does this all the time to me. He just really wants to be part of the show.
I mean, his name's Coltrane. He's a musician.
Yeah.
So Sean, I mean, then that kind of means that in some cases there's an element of your job where you kind of have to be the dream killer a little bit. Would you say? I mean, like you have to kind of hit TDs with maybe some hard truths they don't necessarily want to hear. Is that something that you've learned to accept with your job? Is it one of the more difficult parts? Like, how do you approach that part of things?
Yes, that's a really good point. I recall going to Emporia back in like 2012 before the 2013 AM Worlds, and you know, they had their famed country club course, and I remember walking into that dynamic disc store and just kind of feeling like, uh-oh, here comes the enemy. And so any situation, a new situation I go into, I approach it, you know, very cautiously, and I don't come in guns a-blazing and saying, we're going to do this, 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 and this. It's more of, hey, let's check it out. Let's see what you guys are thinking. Let me give you a little bit of philosophy and, you know, what the PDGA is kind of thinking. And it goes back to the speed of play, you know, safety, stuff like that. And just gradually, you know, broach the idea of, you know, hey, maybe we don't want to have a 425-foot island hole for, you know, the 850 rated players. I'm making that example up, but it gradually, each visit, it just kind of works itself out. And I can honestly say 100% of the time after every site visit, me and the TDs and or course directors are always on the same page. And then from that point forward until the event, we have a great relationship, and we will work through email or on the phone to, you know, address any, you know, potential concerns.
So speaking about potentially being the bad guy, as a former touring pro, is it kind of weird for you to be in an administrative position when you're with all of your peers having to enforce rules? And I know it's been quite a few years, but how does that feel for you?
I feel completely comfortable with it, and I'm extremely pleased that it's never been an issue, and I feel like a lot of players respect me. I believe it was 2006 was the first time I switched over to the administrative side. I had injured my knee and was in Augusta for Worlds, and wasn't going to be able to play. And I remember Brian Graham asking me if I wanted to marshal, and I was pretty nervous about it because here I am still, you know, close to all these top players. And so one thing we did is made sure that I stayed away from the MPO side of it. But very quickly, it actually worked in my favor that players knew me and realized that I, you know, knew the rules and everything was going on, and they would come to me and out of respect and ask questions for me specifically. So it's never been an issue and has been quite good.
Cool. That's good. We know that you're hiring or helping to hire an event coordinator to take on the role that you had last year. What's the status of that?
We received 32-ish, 34-ish applications. And and myself, Mike Downs, and Andrew Sweeten went through those and narrowed it down to 10, who we then have sent a follow-up questionnaire with just some generic questions, you know, when can you start work or U.S. citizen, blah, blah, blah. But then some more job specific questions, and those were actually due yesterday. So we've got 10 of those sitting on our desk, and we're going to go through those. We've got a little matrix for scoring, and fingers crossed, we will be close to having a decision over the weekend. I'm not sure if we're going to narrow it down to a top 2, 3, or 4 and then do a phone interview. That's kind of still up in the air, but I can honestly say there's, out of those 10, there is a good handful, if not all 10, that I would be happy to work alongside of. And a large group of those 10, I know personally and actually have worked with them either as TDs or, you know, marshals, officials in that capacity. So we're looking pretty good there.
Very cool. Nice.
Looking forward to seeing who you get to hire.
What's which event are you looking forward to most this year? I know you're going to go to a couple ones you maybe haven't been to before.
Yeah, my plan is to, so far, things can always change, to hit all of the national tour events, all 4 of our major world events, and then we'll see how it shakes down at the end of the year. But probably Portland is the first one. I haven't been there for that event since the last time we had Worlds there, which was 2014. Yeah. So it's been a while since I've been there. And as we know, that's a pretty magical place, pretty magical courses, great city. So it'll be good to get back there.
So as a former touring pro, what's one of your best memories of tour life?
The one that pops in my head right away is the first time I went over to Scandinavia and Europe and got to play a couple events over there and got to play the Stockholm Open or Stockholm Disc Golf Championships and see Jarva and that facility. And it really opened my eyes to how top level events can be run. You know, I'd been to all of our world championships and stuff at the time, and that was the first big event where I'd seen a facility that was just truly disc golf only, you know, no pedestrians, no park visitors. They, you know, had a full pro shop, driving range. I mean, it was world class. They on site had a sit down dinner with like real china and silverware, and they just treated everybody like, you know, like it was the greatest event ever. And then I went to the Japan Open, and that was a very similar experience, if not even greater. So those are two super fond memories.
So this may be hard to narrow down, but you were the first person to play in all 50 states, and you have played on 5 continents now, right? You've got more to go?
Yeah, I got two continents left. I need South America and Antarctica.
Well, they're pretty close to each other.
Yeah, the South America one I don't think is too big of a deal, but it's a big check to write to get to Antarctica.
We've got some plans in the works. But my question is, what is your favorite course out of all the courses you've played?
Oh, that's a hard one. It changes all the time. I used to be able to say, oh gosh, I love Stafford Lake out in California, obviously, because I put that one in. And then I love Yarva. And, you know, you go see the two courses in Texas and Sela Ranch. And every time you go play some of these new phenomenal courses, you know, Iron Hill, it just changes. I honestly can't say I have a favorite course. Maybe it's this new Ravenwood course here in Nashville that we're working on. That could be my favorite course. But I have a handful of courses that I really like. So sorry.
How many have you played? Do you know? Do you keep track?
I have never kept track. I've gone through the disc golf course review and put on there as many as I could remember. And I've never looked up what the actual rules are. You know, does a temp course that's got played one time, you know, does a...
Oh, I totally count those.
Does an 18-hole course then gets turned into a 27-hole course? I don't know what the rules are. but my best guess estimates are around the 900 range.
Dang. I got some catching up to do. All right, well, one more question, Sean, before we let you go, and this is a really important one. Why won't you play Sarah's mixed doubles event that is coming up next week?
Yeah.
Well, for one, right now it's full, so.
All right, fine. Why wouldn't you sign up for it? There we go. Better question.
I was so hot and heavy in the sport and immersed in the competition and thrived on it and, you know, loved playing in the final nines in front of the people, and then just kind of got to the been there, done that, and lost the fire for that. And now my little catchphrase is I don't need to pay money to be frustrated out on the course. I would probably be okay with playing a fun doubles event, you know, non-sanctioned or something like that. I might think about
I'm calling BS on yeah, that he's one. He's softening. I've tried multiple times.
He's softening with age. You're just a big teddy bear inside there.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But I do.
I'm holding you to that. This is recorded, so.
I do play quite often, you know, locally on our courses, you know, probably on average a couple times a week. So I do still play. Just
oh, of course.
The competition doesn't get me excited anymore.
Well, in that case, then I won't feel so bad when you beat me every time we play out on the road this year. So that'll be good. Actually, I probably should feel worse because that means that you're not even really competing and you're still beating me. So either way. Anyway, Sean, thank you for taking the time out. Looking forward to catching up with you out on the road soon. And, you know, we'll have to check in again later this season, see how things evolve in your new role.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you guys for having me on.
All right, thank you.
Give all the dogs kisses for me.
All righty.
That was Sean Sinclair, the PDGA Events Manager. We'll be back here in just a moment on PDGA Radio. All right, Sarah, time to wrap up the show. Thank you again to Ricky and Sean for the chat. I'm looking forward to seeing both those guys out in Vegas. It's going to be a big year for everybody. But before we can really get into thinking about Vegas, where it's... I mean, it might be warm, the weather there was kind of miserable the first couple of days last year, but great the last two. Let's think about where it's not great, Sarah. It's ice bowl season. I love ice bowls. I think they're amazing. It's like the perfect embodiment of disc golf to me, where it's you're going out, it's competition, but not overly competitive, at least in most cases. Some of them are super competitive. But and then, you know, most of them have a charity component, and it's just a nice way to get out and still throw some discs and do some good stuff.
Stamps are normally really cool.
The stamps
a lot of
are
people
cool.
collect.
We have a whole series of them down here in Southern California. It's the Golden Sombrero series.
Nice.
Ironically enough, we call it an ice bowl, even though I don't even know if they're doing one at Mountain High this year. I'd have to go back and look, but that would usually be the only place we actually have ice at the ice bowl. We have one of them is called Ice Bowl in Paradise.
Nice.
So I don't know. But I just wanted to give a shout out to everyone who's playing ice bowls. We've got one going on at the International Disc Golf Center this weekend. There's plenty on the calendar. Sarah, do you know of any ice bowls in your region?
Yeah, there's one coming up in the Nashville area. I believe it's the last weekend of the month, but I'm not going to be playing it. I haven't played an ice bowl in years.
I think we should
try
and play an ice bowl. I think if we can, we should try and play one. There's going to be one. We do one around here that's on Super Bowl Sunday. They call it the Super Ice Bowl. You get done before the game starts. Or I've heard we're going to maybe have one in our area at a new temp course. So I think I'm going to try and get
it. Would that be your first rated round?
Yeah, probably. I don't have rounds yet. I know. I need to get
some
ratings.
You should totally do it.
I need to get some ratings.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
I want to be able to judge you.
I just don't play that many tournaments. I just cover them, and I go to them, and I watch people throw a lot better than me.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But I want to be able to judge you.
Thank you.
With arbitrary.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do if I shoot better than your rating?
I'll be mad and I'll quit the show.
Oh, man.
I'll challenge you to a duel, of course.
There we go. We do need to play against each other sometime.
For sure.
That would be fun. Neutral field, place we've never played before. Put our skills on display. So anyway, without all the rambling, I was thinking this would be a good opportunity for people who've listened this far in the show. Send us some stories. I want to hear your most harrowing ice bowl stories. You know, what have you braved to go out and play an ice bowl in the winter? Or conversely, send us an email and brag about how awesome the weather is in your area, and we'll rub it in the face of all the other people who are playing real ice bowls. So either way, send us your feedback. Go play an ice bowl. They're great. Again, we're at radio@pdga.com. Sarah, I think we should have a show next week, right? I know we're kind of in this weird, like, semi-off season, not a ton going on zone. We can probably work something next week, right?
I'll try to stir up some drama so we have something to talk about.
Oh, hey, all right. Go do it on Facebook.
I'm just kidding. I don't even know.
2008 versus 2018 me.
Oh my gosh. I felt like I had to, and I look really different. So it was.
You do.
Fun.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that was a compliment.
Kind of. I think. Oh, yeah. No, it wasn't bad. Sorry. I take it back. I didn't mean to make it sound like it was a bad
thing. No, it's okay.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't. There wouldn't be that much.
I feel like you. I was going to say, I feel like for guys, unless you have a very dramatic haircut, it's pretty much the same.
Yeah, my hair was pretty much the same. I had some facial hair that I sometimes grow now that I had more back then. But really, it would just be pretty boring, I feel like. I'd probably look older. I don't really want to see how much older I look. Like, I'm already well aware of that when I go to the store and, like, don't get carded for things anymore. So,
oh, no.
I don't need to put it on social media. No, like, I'm at that age where I get really excited when I get carded somewhere. I'm creeping toward the master's division. So
you got 5 years. Calm down.
5 years. I'm 30. I'm going to be 37 this year, Sarah. You're giving me a little.
Okay. You have 3 years and some change.
Three and some change. I'm going to make it my goal to get an ace before I get in the master's division.
That's a great goal.
I don't want to set a goal to make an ace though, because then that's going to just disappoint me.
Yeah.
Anyway. All
right. You'll naturally get an ace because your resolution is to play more.
That's kind of what I'm hoping on. That's what I'm thinking on. All right. Well, hey, Sarah, always a pleasure. Have a good rest of the week. Everybody out there in podcast land, thanks for listening. That was Sarah Lamerson. I'm Steve Hill. Be good to each other. We will see you next week for another episode.